This episode of Enterprise Radio is brought to you by the Before It Happened podcast series. From transportation and AI to just anything you can put in your home, office, or pocket, you'll hear from the innovators themselves as they tell their stories of how they brought those visions to life. To listen in or to subscribe, simply visit beforeithappened.com.
Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of the Enterprise Podcast Network, featuring some of the most prominent business professionals in the world today. And now your host, Eric Dye.
And once again, this is Eric Dye, and welcome to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Today, we're going to discuss Bloom Health Partners' origins and how its co-founders, Abbas Khan and Cole Lysop, plan to help schools, businesses, and entertainment productions operate in what we know as the new normal. And gentlemen, thanks for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio.
Thanks for having us, Eric.
Thanks, Eric. Pleasure to be here.
Certainly is our pleasure to have you both with us, and looking forward to learning more about Bloom Health Partners. So, Mr. Lysop, for starters, what exactly is Bloom Health Partners? What kind of service do you provide, and who are your primary clients? Let's start there.
Sure. Thanks, Eric. So, Bloom Health Partners was born in the midst of the pandemic, really early 2020, and we've had a hand in helping Hollywood productions, theme parks, live music events, Fortune 500 companies, and now schools, K through 12 schools, safely reopen their doors. We've helped companies and industries navigate the COVID crisis and continue to keep their operations going by offering flexible COVID-19 testing, advisory solutions, and now on-site health clinics for some of our corporate clients. And we started out as a business-to-consumer drive-through testing site, and now we're a full-service B2B company in just over a year. So lots of growth happening, and along with that comes some challenges with hiring and scaling. But the central goal is democratizing the availability of healthcare in the workplace at a time when communities and a more flexible work environment needs it most.
Yeah, thanks for that overview on Bloom Health Partners, and certainly looking forward to hearing more and learning more now. Mr. Khan, if you would, Bloom launched about a year and a half ago, as you mentioned, in the heart of the pandemic. Can you tell us a little bit about creating a pop-up COVID testing site in a parking lot and what happened to lead up to that moment?
Sure. My family actually is from Connecticut, while Cole and I live in Texas, and we were actually inspired by the work of my father, actually. So the governor of Connecticut, Ned Lamont, had put together an advisory board to help him through the early signs of COVID. As you know, the Northeast was impacted first: New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, that tri-state area. And the governor had the foresight to put together folks that had some industry understanding and help the public sector out. We were in Texas, and this was right when the Texas got hit hard. The surge came from COVID, and through the work of these folks in Connecticut, they actually acknowledged an innovation in testing, which was actually at that time what the innovation was: saliva. There were other folks doing testing in Texas, but many people were reluctant to getting tested. People didn't want to go through, sticking that thing up the nose and essentially going through brain surgery. So we were one of the first people to introduce this technology, which came out of the Yale School of Public Health. And actually, interestingly enough, we didn't actually own or have our own labs. We'd partnered with labs that were just out of state. Texas was impacted hard. There was more demand than there was supply, than there was bandwidth for these labs in state to handle. We actually partnered with folks' labs in Oklahoma, and some of these labs actually didn't know how to do the saliva testing. And we actually sent our scientists and worked inside of these laboratories and validated this type of testing for them, and couriered the samples from from Texas to out of state. So that's actually how we got started. The impact was immediate. I think on our first day, we had more than 500 cars show up. There was days that we had increased volume from there. And so we, you know, it was certainly a good feeling, and it's certainly something that the community needed. So we were happy to be there for them.
Pretty awesome stuff, and certainly making an impact, no doubt about that. Now, referring to the pop-up COVID testing site in a parking lot, what actually happened after that? How did Bloom go from a parking lot to working with Fortune 500 companies, TV and movie studios and schools? I've got to hear the details on that.
Well, I'll take that, Eric. So, you know, as we were in this parking lot doing, you know, anywhere from, you know, 500 to 1,000 tests a day, you know, across from NRG Stadium there in Houston, you know, Abbas, the marketing genius, was pretty successful at getting us on the local news and even national news. We were on CNN. We started to receive calls from companies who had either seen us on the news or they had employees who were coming to our site. And these companies called us up and said, hey, you know, we love what you're doing. We have a couple hundred employees. Instead of sending our companies to your site and they've got to wait in line and take time off, would it make sense for you guys to just come to us and, you know, do the testing here? And that's when kind of the light bulb went off that there's, you know, a huge demand. A lot of the people we had been seeing in the parking lot were simply coming to us to get tested because they needed to show a proof of a negative test in order to get back to work or to go travel. And so we realized, gosh, why don't we go right to these companies and offer them on-site testing solutions? So, you know, the first company was a large chemical company based there in Houston. We had a handful of other companies in Houston that we started providing this on-site testing for. And then, you know, we actually had a clinic in Dallas, just a few hours up the road in Houston. And so we had one of our team members started reaching out to large corporations in the DFW area. And, you know, one of the first clients we got in Dallas was American Airlines and Envoys. So we came on site. We were testing for their critical operations center, you know, keeping, you know, Envoy American Airlines up and running, you know, for the first month or two that we started testing there. From there, Six Flags engaged us to do some of their employee testing and also engaged our advisory team to advise them on how they might be able to help guests feel safer coming to the parks. We picked up PepsiCo as a client, you know, both for their employees and also as an advisory client. And something interesting about Pepsi, we did their testing at the Super Bowl this past year in Tampa Bay. So that was a fun event after, you know, after 9 months of, you know, really grueling work. It was fun to see our team members on the ground in Tampa Bay, you know, providing testing for the Super Bowl. You know, and it's always good to take a pause and celebrate some success. And I think our team was able to do that. And then we got right back to it, of course, after the Super Bowl. But you mentioned Hollywood production studios. Abbas talked about innovations. There's a lot of Hollywood productions. Well, there's some union, Screen Actors Guild, Directors Guild requirements, pretty strict testing requirements. You know, these actors and crew members have to get tested, you know, up to multiple times a week. And some of these productions occur in remote areas that are nowhere close to a laboratory, and they need results turned around in less than 24 hours. So, you know, kind of a unique innovation we brought to Hollywood and the film and television industry are these modular labs. So we've created four of those modular, you know, complex PCR laboratories. You know, for the Hollywood industry, you know, servicing productions and in rural Oklahoma, in Atlanta, and also Los Angeles. We're about to set up a laboratory in New York and Vancouver, and that's really been interesting to see the inner workings of the film industry, because there's a lot of work that goes into, you know, what we all see on TV or at the theater. And you know, there's a lot of people behind the scenes there, and so that's been you know, some interesting work for us.
Well, that certainly is quite a report. Impressive and amazing how everything's come together in incredible fashion. No doubt. Now, Abbas, get into what your vision is for the Bloom Service platform, and can you describe your business model and what makes Bloom different from competitors in the space?
Yeah, I'm happy to jump in there. So, you know, it's interesting. In the space, I suppose if you were to put us in a bucket, it would be in the space of occupational health. But, you know, the needs of these businesses, especially, or in organizations, I should say, both in the public and private sector, they've changed drastically. They have been changing drastically before COVID, and COVID has really been the catalyst of what employee health looks like. You know, even if we look top down at the roles of these organizations, if we focus on the role of a chief medical officer, as you may know, Eric, typically the chief medical officer was a little bit more outward looking. And these are brilliant individuals with both, you know, that understand organizational behavior and medical and have medical backgrounds typically, and really typically they were more outward looking. So, you know, an example would be if it was a food company, they would be focused on the nutrition on the labels and keeping the consumers healthy. But, you know, we're seeing things change post COVID. There's been a lot more attention inward looking. Many of these organizations have challenges, quite frankly. They have aging employees. They have workers' compensation challenges. And by Bloom essentially proving that we can efficiently bring health on site, albeit in a testing environment, what's happening now is that we're actually evolving into a broader solution to essentially keep these organizations going. And so that is very much part of our future, is to support these organizations and essentially keep them operational.
Again, thank you for the report so far, and I'm sure you really enjoyed helping out in all regards, and as mentioned, at the Super Bowl this past year. Now, this episode of Enterprise Radio is being brought to you by our partners at the Before It Happened podcast series. Before any world-changing innovation, there was a moment, an event, a realization that sparked the idea. The Before It Happened podcast series is a show about that idea. Each week, host Donna Laughlin takes a deep dive into a singular light bulb moment that inspired the visionaries to push forward and change our lives. To listen in or to subscribe, visit beforeithappened.com. Again, that is beforeithappened.com. Today, we're joined by Mr. Cole Lysaunt, managing partner and co-founder at Bloom Health Partners, along with Abbas Khan, managing partner and co-founder also at Bloom Health Partners. They've joined us here today on Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Now, continuing on, this past year and a half has put a lot of stress on our healthcare system, of course, and in the process shown parts that were broken. If we can, let's talk a little bit about what you saw and the disruption that Bloom looked to create within the industry, and how are you transforming healthcare support and making companies more dynamic?
You know, Eric, I think that this started early on. You know, even if we would go back to the days that we were on a parking lot, it's interesting that you bring up how the disruption we've created in healthcare. And it's interesting, when we were in Houston, we were actually in the parking lot across from the NRG Stadium, which is in central Houston. And we were looking across, the view across from us was actually one of the largest medical centers in the country. It was astonishing to us how cars by the hundreds were lining up for us to provide the service when we had this resource across the street. And so I think it's a combination of a couple of things. I think one thing is that the existing infrastructure wasn't actually able to handle the demand of this clientele, and we continue to see it today with businesses. The labs and laboratories and diagnostic centers, that's not a new concept. They've been around for decades. But quite frankly, they weren't able to accommodate towards something like this. They weren't able to accommodate. And I actually question whether they actually understood how businesses operate. Cole and I, actually, interestingly enough, we were roommates in our 20s. And so when this project came about, he was one of the first people I called. I knew he had this. He's a successful entrepreneur, but more than that, he understood logistics and understood operation, and he's somebody I wanted to partner with. But both of us were analysts in organizations, and so I think that when corporations went to the existing infrastructure, they weren't nimble enough They weren't flexible enough. The 9-to-5 model didn't work. Many companies were going to businesses saying, hey, we can help you with this COVID testing, but we require a minimum, or there's a subscription. You know, at Bloom, we never did that. We said, you know, what is the problem that we're trying to solve for you? And we came in and did exactly that. We solved their problem without, and what we realized that it wasn't necessarily the testing. It's if you're looking at the airline industry versus the movie industry versus, you know, schools, these are very different operations. And what we did at Bloom was really dove in and try to understand really specifically how they're operating. Where would the roadblocks be? And we devised different solutions depending on what the clients needed. I'll give you an example. Cole hit on this a little bit earlier, but the movie industry was very interesting. When the Screen Actors Guild and some of the unions said, I think at the time they said you need 3 PCR tests a week. As Cole mentioned, these were in rural settings. Many times a production shoots until late hours in the evening, and then they need everybody to be back by morning time. And this is, by the way, it might be in northern Oklahoma in a completely rural setting. PCR times, the turnaround times, were anywhere from 48 to 72 hours to 5 days. Our labs, after our innovation, we were able to turn around this test for them to 4 to 6 hours by creating a dedicated laboratory system. It was unheard of, but it was absolutely what was needed. We're seeing this in schools. You know, in order to actually, and there is a misconception that we're actually battling with in the school industry, which is that people think that by screening, it's actually going to shut down schools. That my kid, okay, you're going to find out that my child is positive, and that's going to actually shut down the community in the school. And it's actually, that's what we're trying to, we're working with communities now to help them understand. Actually, this, by screening in this way, it is actually the best way to keep these schools open. And it's in the work. It's so important that we do that, by the way. You know, particularly in some of the communities, we're working with many southern states. We're the preferred vendor of a few southern states here. School is of course the obvious where we need to keep kids in school to keep the education going. There's data suggesting that that children, quite frankly, are falling behind. But for many communities, it's also a food security issue. This is how children eat. The families are dependent on keeping these schools open so that they get food. And so our job, again, is to keep these businesses operational. They're customized solutions. And quite frankly, one size doesn't fit all. And I think that is the approach for many other organizations or many legacy organizations in our category.
That is some super and very helpful information, and thanks for touching on that. Now, continuing on that topic, education and misinformation have been tremendous challenges for everyone during COVID. Tell us a little bit about your board of directors and your advisory board, and who do you have involved and why, and these boards are critical to your client support model. Explain this in further detail.
Sure thing, Eric. Thanks for bringing that up. And, sadly, as you mentioned, there's been a ton of misinformation out there, and we actually have a lot of the members of our advisory board would be the first ones to tell you that unfortunately, COVID's been very politicized, and so sometimes it's hard to cut through the headlines that you see, whether it's on TV or posts on social media, et cetera. And so we've really put together what we feel is a world-class advisory team of not only scientists, but researchers, business executives. So just to name a few of them, as the boss mentioned, his father, Dr. Mahmoud Khan, really has advised us from the beginning and identified that there was going to be a need for testing. He sits on the board of NIST, and so NIST actually oversees CLIA and laboratories here in the U.S. And he saw very early on that the lab infrastructure in the U.S. wasn't going to have the capacity to keep up with the testing demands for COVID. Dr. Khan also was previously the vice chairman of PepsiCo prior to that, it was with Takeda Pharmaceuticals. And so, you know, long history with operating businesses as an executive, you know, hundreds of thousands of employees underneath him at a company like Pepsi. And before that, he was actually a practicing physician at the Mayo Clinic. So, you know, strong background there. We also have the chief medical officer from GE, Dr. Nimish Akalia, is on our board of directors, you know, and is also on our medical and scientific advisory board. Board certified in internal medicine and occupational medicine. Prior to her role at GE, she actually worked at Johns Hopkins University and helped develop their occupational health program. So she's been a great great resource as we look beyond COVID, of course. And then, you know, as far as we've got, you know, a number of infectious disease experts, you know, two I'll hit on that are on our advisory board. Dr. Alexander Stemmer, who has over 50 years in infectious disease clinical research and internal medicine experience. He did some research pretty early on in the pandemic that was actually published in the New England Journal of Medicine, which is highly respected in the field, you know, amongst his medical peers. And then also Dr. James Shepard, who's actually comes from the Yale School of Medicine. He's a professor of internal medicine, you know, infectious diseases, and you know, he's been an advisor to, you know, a number of government officials, you know, around the world. And speaking of government, we also have the former secretary of Health and Human Services, who, you know, from kind of a public, you know, health perspective, has been able to, you know, give us a different lens. You know, of course, you know, we come from more of the private, you know, private sector, you know, business world, and, you know, he's been able to help advise us on, you know, what's going on, you know, kind of not behind the scenes, but you know, in up in D.C., you know, we've talked about K-12 testing. You know, there's been some funds earmarked from the federal government, from the ARPA program, you know, that have been earmarked for K-12 testing. And, you know, he's been able to help advise us on, you know, who we need to be speaking with at the different states. Every state is kind of carrying out these K-12 testing programs separately. And he's been an invaluable resource, you know, as we kind of, you know, juggled the, you know, the business, you know, aspect of this, and then also it's healthcare. So we want to be very sensitive to that and make sure that we're following the science. But then also, as we get into K-12 testing, you know, not only is it highly politicized, you know, some people, you know, want their children tested, you know, some people don't. But then also, these are federal funds. So how do we navigate that? So, you know, a number of different things to juggle here that, quite frankly, Abbas and I don't have, you know, a deep background on a number of those things. So, you know, it's really been a treat. And frankly, we wouldn't have been able to do it without, you know, these advisors, you know, with such deep experience in their individual fields.
And I was actually thinking the same thing. Tremendous support in every regard, and that is so important. Just a couple more questions before we conclude here today. What do you think are the biggest challenges that companies and industries face now in this phase of the pandemic, and how are you helping them navigate these challenges?
Sure. Happy to take that, Eric. I think that truly there's a lack of leadership. The messages are inconsistent, and it's a privilege, and quite frankly, it's quite a responsibility when we have you know, the leadership from organizations, both in the public and private sector, whether they are folks from health departments or chief medical officers, coming to us and asking these questions. Unfortunately, many times they're coming to us with a fair bit of desperation. I would say that 80% of our customers, and this is anecdotal data, but I know it's up there, come to us after working with an occupational health company or a COVID testing company prior to coming to us. And quite frankly, they come to us because somebody had dropped the ball. They weren't able to accommodate their needs. there is inconsistent messages. Even for us, as we as an advisory group, cite sources from different organizations, the messaging has been inconsistent. So we're doing our best. I think the challenges has been a lack of leadership in the space, to be quite frank.
And thanks for your input on that, and that is appreciated. Lastly, Bloom was recently acquired, I understand, by Matry Health Technologies. What does this mean for Bloom and Matry, and what is next from here?
Sure. Well, so I believe we closed in mid-July. We merged with Matry Health Technologies, and really it's a merger of equals of sorts. You know, Abbas and I are still large shareholders, in Matry Health Technologies, and really what we saw with Matry was, there's a lot of very deep experience in tech, and software, and so they've been building a platform that can be the backbone, as we roll out, additional occupational, on-site health services to, these corporate clients that we have. Currently, who have been asking for, what else can you do for us, beyond COVID testing? And so we've started to roll out these on-site clinics, but also, digital vaccination records, things like that. So, neither Abbas nor I, come from a kind of technology software background. And so, as we all know, in this day and age, it's really hard to compete if you don't have some chops, in kind of the tech space. So they've got a CTO, Andrew McCann, who's joined the team now and is helping us build out, our platform. And Andrew Morton is the CEO, who's now the CEO of the combined company. And another thing that being a public company does, it allows us to access, capital markets a little bit easier. And so, as we look to continue to build out, and scale this business beyond COVID, especially the on-site health clinics, having access to capital markets to be able to invest, is something that's going to be really important. So, we're excited to be a public company now, merged with Matry Health Technologies, and just excited about the future.
Yeah, with reason and a lot to be excited about. Gentlemen, really has been great to get to know you and Bloom Health Partners and the acquisition by Matry Health Technologies. Where can people best find you online and on social channels? Give us the details there.
Sure. So the company website is Bloom Health Partners. com. I don't think we've been too active outside of LinkedIn, for Bloom Health Partners, and then my Twitter handle is Cole Lysot, and Abbas.
My Twitter handle is Akhan, Akhan 06830.
And that certainly works. We'll leave links accordingly within the show notes of this broadcast. Mr. Lysot and Mr. Khan, thanks for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio, and continued success to you.
Thanks for your time, Eric. Enjoyed being on.
Thanks, Eric. Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
And my honor to do so. We've been speaking with Cole Lysot, the managing partner and co-founder at Bloom Health Partners, along with Abbas Khan, managing partner and co-founder also at Bloom Health Partners. And for further details, visit bloomhealthpartners.com. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Tune into our live location as we are streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Enterprise Radio. To subscribe to more of our programming, visit epodcastnetwork.com. This is the ePodcast Network.
This episode of Enterprise Radio was brought to you by our partners at the Before It Happened podcast series. Nearly 20 years ago, Donna Laughlin launched a public relations firm with the sole purpose of helping visionaries tell their story to the world. Now, two decades later, she's sharing those stories and more with you. To listen in or to subscribe, simply visit beforeithappened.com. Again, that is beforeithappened.com.